Hello and welcome to a new season of Season of the Witch with Rowan Oaken, the show where we spill the tea on the occult and read the leaves to filth. Now I'm your host Rowan, and in this week's episode we kick off a new season, and in the spirit of how each season has launched, we are back into spooky Samhain season, ready to get cozy, witchy, and of course, a little bit bitchy. But first, an update. So where has the show been, and where did Tesco? Sounds like Tesco, that's like a supermarket over here in the UK. That's not funny to anyone else outside of the UK. Although we do get Tesco in other parts of Europe, so maybe. Where did Tess pause? Go. Where's she gone? Why is she not here? Why is it just Season of the Witch with Rowan Oaken? Now, Tess won't be joining us for season three. Fingers crossed we may be able to get Tess in at some point, but it's unlikely. Tess is working on lots of other new and exciting projects elsewhere. Hopefully, I will be able to announce some of that in the future. So what about me? What about you, Rowan? What have you been up to? Why have you not posted anything in such a long time? Let's just start with an apology. I'm so sorry. I am so sorry that I've not been able to do what I love the most, which is this, which is being witchy bitchy and hosting this fabulous season that I've always enjoyed doing, and so grateful of all the listeners that we've had out there and those of you who've been contacting me over on Instagram asking when this next season will be going. And I've really not had the space, the headspace, to be able to engage in a lot of that. Our previous season with Tess, now we had to pause that one just mostly because our schedules did not work. They were clashing considerably from when we both were having time off work to be able to do the podcast and work together. And that kind of progressed to a point where we're like, oh, we really can't fit this in at the moment. And it's something we both loved. I also started my doctoral research, which was a lot more intense than I'd expected, which, you know, I work full time, of course it's going to be intense. Then my regular day job, lots of things happening in there, getting very busy. My son's school has been quite challenging as well. Those of you long-time listeners to the show will know that I have a son with special educational needs. So that is very challenging outside of those sorts of things. But this space is a very therapeutic space that I'm so grateful for, and I'm so grateful that I'm able to touch so many of you. Already it's happening. I've not touched anyone, I promise. Everyone gets cancelled these days for that. For the listeners who've never listened to this show before, you will know that I will say inappropriate things. I will be an inappropriate person, but I will not touch you, I promise. Unless asked for. Now, I'm a married man, I'm not going to touch you. This has descended into chaos already. I have moved people with the topics we've covered. And I am coming at you today with a very moving topic, something really close to me, something that many of us have probably experienced at some point in some shape or form or other in their life, and that is grief. I will be looking at grief today. But I will, to kind of continue that conversation, I will be stepping back to a degree, not engaging as much in online activity. So as the launch of this new season, I won't be as engaged online. Do send me things. I may not be able to reply to them all. I do read everything I see. I don't always have time to respond. But I do love our community. I love the fact that our listeners are, I think, some of the best listeners, and of course I would say that, but the listeners who are critical of the craft, they're critical of themselves. And this season will continue that. We will still continue an emphasis on not having a blind belief. And yes, that can be very necessary for many belief systems, but you will still find in me and in this space a very critical space of the craft. This is coming from someone who engages in a craft-based pagan witchcraft practice, but it's still a very critical practice. It's still very grounded. And I will continue to question what I do. And I would continue to ask you to question me about things that I do, and I will endeavour to integrate that into my thinking and perhaps even the podcast as well. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about grief, as I've mentioned. And why now, I suppose, is probably like, why would you launch a podcast with grief? It's for some reason, there was something telling me to do it. I don't know what it was. You know, it is Samhain, which is kind of exciting. We're starting back at where we began the podcast. You know, we generally launch around Samhain period. And this begins to stir a lot of emotions, a lot of challenging emotions when we think about the dead. And it's interesting to think that one of my first episodes was on the challenge of remembering complex people we have lost during the Samhain period. But I want to talk more specifically about the emotion of grief, where that might come from, but also how we begin to deal with grief through practice, both spiritual and non-spiritual practices as well. Now, in terms of where I'm talking from my experience and positioning that experience, I'm talking as someone who has been brought up in the West. So I've been brought up in Western traditions and expectations of grief and of grieving. I think that's quite important to mention because that has an impact on the way that funeral rites happen. You know, I was brought up in a Christian household, as many of you who've listened to the podcast before know. My mum was a Catholic, albeit very spiritual in terms of the pagan sense. So my experiences are rooted in that. And I think that's something that I would like you to have kind of a critical ear out for when I'm talking through these things. So I am someone, for the long time listener of the show, I'm someone who I lost my mum when I was, I think I was 20 or, nine, or 19, I think, or just turning 20. I've also lost a sister as well. And I've lost a best friend. I always feel like best friend's a really weird word. I feel like, I'm like, would she have called me a best friend? Definitely not. I think just a very good friend. And these are people that I continue to think of in my life. And they're not people that I sit grieving over now. I think to talk of grief and that that initial reaction that we have, which is very different from these very different people. You know, those three people that I've just thought to mention now are people that have died. And each one has a very different result in terms of the way that I grieve them, a different reaction. One particular death may end up having a moment whereby it reminds me of the one that came previously as well. But I want to talk at this point around grief from this Western perspective. You know, the idea that we bury the dead. We bury the dead. That was really great grammar. We bury the dead. You know, we box it up and we move on. Which, for those of you in your kind of pagan spiritual practice, there is generally surrounding that, and I'm using generalizations here, I'm making some form of assumptions, but this more generalizations than assumptions, there is a belief system within that, that there is something more to this. Sometimes challenged by a Christian sense of someone going off and living somewhere, but perhaps more predominantly in pagan belief systems of energy living on and moving on. But we still hold predominantly very Christian traditions when it comes to death, and that is either through burial or it is through cremation. We're seeing other things coming through in here, but even the whole structure of death is built around that. We are moving towards maybe more individualistic perspectives of death within that. You know, but even as a society, we have lost, you know, this mourning period of wearing black, this very public display of mourning when it comes to grief. And we have moved towards something that is perhaps a bit more individualistic, perhaps. And you know, that may have come through the accessibility of things like grief counseling, for example. But I find it interesting looking at it from maybe a lens of capitalism. There's no time to mourn in modern society. Death is also, it's an industry. The body is processed. The mourning is processed. The emotions are processed in that. And we're given less scope, less time to sit in our grief, to process our grief. And this, when I kind of the biggest grief that I felt to date was losing my mum And at such a young age, and being in a situation where that kind of, I've talked about this on the podcast, it was a very disruptive thing in terms of it meant I lost my home, my stability. And within that, I was quite fixated on this idea of my own grief and what that meant, because it was one of those things where when it happened at the start, people were very empathetic, very understanding, but there is an expectation that you get back to it within weeks. I remember having a conversation, and this is super strange now actually for me. I remember having a conversation with my, I was at university at the time, with my lecturer, and saying, I think I need more time. I think I need a few more weeks. And they said, if you take more weeks, you will have to withdraw from the course. And this is super strange because I actually work with them now. And I'd never tell them this story. And it was the boot up the butt that perhaps maybe I needed to get me back into it and get me back into university and doing things. But I began to, I did a creative arts BA, and I began to channel that grief into what I was doing. And of course, I was initially interested in that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross model of denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. I think it's what's quite interesting, and it's not really presented in the literature this way, is that it is presented as this kind of linear thing, like someone's died. Oh my God, no, I don't believe it. Denial. Oh, I'm so cross. Oh, that's awful. Anger, you know, it should have been me who had died. Why them? Bargaining. And then I'm so sad. This is awful. What's happened? I've got depression now. And then finally, you know, out the other end, acceptance. I'm fine with it now. On I move with my life. You know, Kubler-Ross does talk a little bit more about that as a cycle. And I always feel that there's a stage missing, and I may get to that in a moment. But I think the bit that I want to focus on, actually, I said, you know, channeling it into what I did, and my spiritual practice was not as prevalent to my day-to-day living as it was back then. But I was doing, and I did something incredibly, what I would call spiritual, through the dealing with that grief. And it was this idea of manifesting in a almost corporeal, tangible sense of where my grief could be a physical object. That's what I was fascinated with. I was also really fascinated with performance-based artists. And what I did was I took these different stages and I created performances from them. And the point of them would, they would be producing some form of physical artifact through each stage. Because I was very interested in the fact that these were very private feelings that existed internally. And perhaps the mourning period of wearing black allowed us to externalize that until it was, in that circumstance, often deemed appropriate to no longer wear black. But it gave a physical form to mourning and to grief. So I'm trying to think of some of the different performances I did now. Probably the ones that stick in my mind are things like anger. You know, I went into a room and just filled myself screaming all day long, just screaming. It was wonderful and painful at the same time. I, you know, went into another room and was like smashing plates. So I had all these like physical artifacts of all these smashed plates, and I thought about depression and kind of this cloak of depression and cloak of mourning as this kind of black mourning garb, and instead wore white and painted my face white, and then wrote all the different kind of thoughts and feelings that had been internalized, that were kind of depressing me down on my body, on my shirt, on my trousers that were all white, and then kind of went about my day wearing this. And of course you get a lot of looks being this kind of embodiment of grief, and I found that really fascinating. Of, you know, this is the my inside out. But what became of that at the end was I had all these things, and I collected them up, all these different performances that I did, and I had my own funeral for grief. And I burnt all these artifacts. And what I ended up doing, and I question this now, is I put them all these artifacts into a casket and titled it The Grief Order, and with my mum's name underneath, and the date of her death, and the date of when I put all of the objects into the box. So it was creating a funeral for my own grief, which is an incredibly witchy thing to be doing. And what I feel that was trying to capture was this linear Kubler-Ross model, which I do not see as linear, this idea of acceptance. And it takes on this very westernized notion of acceptance, whereby it's now boxed up. It's now put away. You move on with your life. You're done now. And I see today, it's so different. It's not acceptance. It's reframing. And I think that is what we need to look through for both in a mundane sense and a witchy sense. How do you begin to reframe a relationship that you have had with a person that is either deceased and maybe not even deceased, that has moved on, a divorce, a split, a change of a situation that you no longer have? Because it's not, and I mentioned this in one of my old podcasts, you don't always have to accept that person, their behaviors, their actions. You don't have to accept the situation that you're in, but I do think you need to reframe that situation. One way to consider that reframing from kind of a witchy perspective, you know, you can think about, you know, setting up whether you have an altar space or just a quiet space. And I like to do things with as few things as possible. So I would be doing something like this. There's maybe two things that I would do or have done in the past, I should say, is, you know, a piece of paper, pen, could be something like a white candle as well. And sitting there, just meditating with that flame. I might cast a circle these days. I'm not casting as many circles. Caveat on that one, though. I have created a garden space that is my magical circle space. And I've got different things, sigils written around, that I feel that I can activate at that time. That just makes me feel like, oh, I'm in a protected space. So I would take the pen and paper, I'd sit down and I'd be visualizing my grief. So I've talked about this manifestation and this making of grief. You might begin to visualize what that is. You might, for example, see this as a cloud, a dark, heavy cloud. Maybe it is a burden. It's a shadow over you that you're looking to remove. You might imagine yourself looking into a mirror that only sees darkness back. It's a black mirror. And within that, meditating on that thought, write down what it is that you are looking to reframe within that grief. What are you looking to change? You know, for me, for a long time I'll stick with my sister for now. Not my sister, sorry, my mum. I'll stick with my mum. I've been talking about my mum. I know that she suffered from something like bipolar disorder. I don't know whether it's still titled bipolar disorder. Or is it manic depressive? That's the no-go with that term. Do school me on which one it is. And there were moments of real significant isolation and deliberate withdrawal of love. And those were things that I could not accept. I would not accept. And writing those down on that piece of paper, I begin to reframe and I begin to think about that cloud. I begin to think about that dark reflection that I can't seem to push past and begin to, yes, maybe accept that those happened, acknowledge that they happened, acknowledge that they hurt, not accept that it's okay, but reframe my own transformation, my own strength, my own wisdom and resilience that has been gained from a challenging situation, and allow that cloud or that darkness to pass. So I'm seeing something brighter. I'm seeing my own reflection. I'm seeing myself changed. And then, bloody love, I don't know what it is. I like burning something. I would then burn what I've written down, and I would often put that into, I've got a cast iron cauldron that I use. I'd put it in there, and I'd scatter the ashes. I'd probably bury them as well, put them back into the earth for some kind of renewal as well. So those are some things that I would consider. You may even consider something more protective, like using like a black cloth or fabric actually physically around a mirror, if it's about that internal self and closing yourself, cocooning yourself in your own protective shell from something that is an overwhelming sense of sadness that has happened. And I think something like that is still quite acceptable. I did warn you that the episodes were maybe going to be a bit heavier than what we're all used to. Still sassy though. The sass is still there. I do think grief is also one of those things where it doesn't have to be. I mentioned this. It doesn't always have to be a person. It could be transitions. That's something that I find really triggering, transitions, moving from one thing to another. I can find that so difficult. And it can trigger a sense of grief, a sense of needing to move on and let go of something, you know, whether that's even like moving house. And I do feel that this is a perfect time to be thinking about feelings of moving on, feelings of letting go. It's autumn. We're in this period of transition. It's reminding us of death and dying and change. So this is a great time to pick up on these sorts of things and really sit into those thoughts and not, you know, we talk about healing around acceptance, but reframing and seeing things differently, seeing the positive changes that we have made in ourselves over time. There are some things with kind of reframing grief that I'd like to mention here, some kind of witchy things. And you know, before I do that, there was one thing I remember reading about grief. This is a long time ago that I found really interesting. And it was the question of, you know, why do we feel that feeling of sadness, that feeling of wanting to cry when we grieve? And one of the theories, it's not proven by any kind of science backing, was that as children, when our parents walk out the room and we want them to come back in, the thing we do, I say parents, could be carers, could be someone else, I'm just moving around in my squeaky chair, the thing we do is cry. And when we cry, they return. So when we lose someone, both dead or they could have just moved on from our lives, we cry because we want them to return. The crying brings about the return. But it doesn't. And that is difficult. That is a really difficult thing for your body to understand, is that I'm crying and this loved one is not coming back. Tough, tough, tough. So you might start thinking about connection. How, through reframing your grief, do you begin to create a connection? I want to split this into two, actually. I want to split this into talking about making a connection and actually breaking a connection, because there may be some people who you grieve that you do miss, and you do want to reframe that in a positive, connected, embedded. I think I was trying to say embedded and embodied together, a way that's embedded into yourself. It's integrated into your being. That's what you want to do. You want to kind of be with that person and have that person in you. Sorry. I'm dumb. So this is these ones are kind of for the loved one lost and still loved, which I think sounds like an agony aunt subject line. One that I love, and this is because I come from a family of foodies, people who love their food, and it's cooking a meal. It might be a meal that they cooked for me. It might be a meal that we ate together. And I even do this with with my husband. My husband's still alive. When we want to remember how life was before we were married, and had busy jobs, and we lived in exciting countries, and we didn't have a child. We will eat a meal or go out for a meal that replicates something we had in those first years of us being together. There is an absolute spiritual connection with food, one that I feel, when I think about how food has come to be what it is today through all the adaptations those seeds have made over the years and the hands it's touched and the thoughts that it's had just to be able to make a tomato the tomato it is today. But it's saturated with water that has gone through our ancestors. It holds this memory. And within that, the recipes that get passed down as well in our families are absolute spells. They are spells that get passed down, spells of memories that are connected to all these different senses. You know, they say that that's a phrase that I really, a real side note, that I get really pissed off with at the minute. They say that. Who's they? Who is they? And there I am using it. But I think it's because we're so used to consuming so much media and so much knowledge that actually to talk from a space of knowledge is really difficult these days. A commonly known and cited fact by multiple people, that's why no one says it, is that the senses, the smelling sense, is one of the most powerful tools in its connection to memory. I can't cite any sources on that at the moment. That's just something that I've heard commonly. So cooking a meal has the capacity through both taste and smell to re-engage the brain with that memory. And there is something both very biological and spiritual, I feel, with the idea of cooking up a meal. And you can, I had this in one of my souring episodes, I don't know which season or episode this was, but the idea of setting up a chair for a loved one to come and sit with you. It was a tradition commonly held by some pagan belief systems to have the chair out, and around Samhain, particularly around that last, you know, when we're getting to when the veil is very thin and we're able to commune with the dead more freely, having dum supper is the word that I was looking for. You would serve a meal for a relative and they would come and share that space with you. Things like setting up altars, setting up spaces outdoors. I kind of add setting up spaces outdoors because that was something I remember when I lost my mum, was I lived nowhere near where she was. There was no shared space that we had. So setting up a space where you feel that you can connect with someone, a space that they may have liked. And this final one, before I move on to thinking about more complicated grief, is naming your grief. Going back to that why we cry, the child that cries for the missing parent, missing carer. I'm crying because I feel this, because name it, manifest, give it a physical presence, give it a name if you have to, other than grief. So let's move next to talking about cutting ties, that kind of idea of a letting go. With letting go, my easiest and favorite go-to is something with string, cord, and I've even been known to use, like, there's people on the street who are like, yeah, Rowan just gets out ivy and he like does this. I've not been known to do that. That's bullshit. That's just something I do. Oh, what a knobhead. Taking some kind of string, cord-like, or even vine-like object to think about a physical bond. So that could be through taking two pieces, tying them together, and actually cutting them apart, and physically cutting them apart, imagining breaking some kind of bond that I am attached to. I might be thinking also of boundaries. if that person is entering my headspace, and I don't want them to be in that headspace and they're taking a lot of grieving space up for me. It might be setting a thorny but protective boundary using hawthorn that could be used both from any element of the hawthorn. Of course, the spikes are going to be much better. And you can think about how you want to work that one. You may go as far as having something with a picture of that person and setting hawthorn around it and burying that in the ground if you're looking for something like that. You might even kind of moving away for something that seems less offensive. This is one that I've done multiple times, is writing a letter to a person. I used to do this from such a young age. I used to write letters. And then weirdly, and I don't know why I did this. No, I do know why I did this. I would then put it under water and just let all of the ink. So I'd use an ink pen and let all the ink wash off until you're just left with a blur. And then I would put it in, I'd put it in the bin, I'd put it in the trash. And one of the main reasons why I put it under water was so no one could read it. I was paranoid that if I was to rip it up and I was to put it in the bin, that someone would piece it together and they would read it. And of course, I was young and I wasn't going to burn something in or outside the house because I was terrified I was going to set fire to something and kill everyone. So water felt really good. And actually, now that I look back on water and I think about that connection, and I was talking about the tomatoes before and being washed with the rain that has gone through this cycle. You can allow that grief, that feeling to be washed out into a cycle and to be that energy to be put elsewhere. So that might be something you would look to do today. I'd be burning it. I'd be burning that letter. I have also in the past, I've sent letters. I've actually written them, put it in an envelope, and I've just put it in the postbox and I've not put a name on it. And I visualize that person receiving it, opening it, reading it, and knowing exactly what I wanted to say but could never say. There was something, there's a technological version of this, and this is maybe not so, it doesn't really fit in this category, but it's made me think of this, was for, I think it was 2 years, maybe 3 years, the mobile network that my mum's phone was on, they hadn't cut her phone number, now it just belongs to someone else, and I've not rung it. Maybe I should put the number on here and you can all ring it. I would ring her phone number and it would go to her voicemail. And I always remember it was, "Hi, it's Joan." It's just like that. I remember the tone of it. "Can't get to the phone right now. If you just leave your name and number and I'll get back to you. Thank you." She always had this really funny phone voice. Like, do you all have a phone voice? Just everyone has a phone voice. I dread to ever hear my own phone voice. My mum's phone voice was fucking hilarious. She was a Scouser. She was from Liverpool. And she really worked really hard. I need to get back onto what I was talking about in a moment. And she's worked really hard to not sound like a dirty Scouser. I love Liverpool. I was brought up near Liverpool. I'm so sorry to my Scouse listeners. You get me though. But she was really ashamed of it. And I think, when she moved, it was at the time of the Beatles and everyone knew the Scouse accent from there. And she kind of tried to play it down and she lost a lot of that as she got older. But as soon as she picked up the phone, she became the poshest bitch you've ever known in your entire life. One of the ones that we always remember is when we went to, as a family, for her 60th, we went to New York. And at customs, is it customs, where they stamp your passport? She was like, "Oh, hello. We're so excited to be here." She's like, "We think your country is amazing. We're just absolutely enthralled to see the Statue of Liberty." Like, what the hell? Keeping up appearances. I love it. Yeah, do you all have a phone voice? Send me your phone voice on Instagram. I want to hear it. I want to hear your phone voices. I dread to think what mine is. So going back to phone voices, leaving voice messages, I would leave voice messages, rambles of just, "Hi, Mom, it's me. I'm just just walking to university and I had a rubbish day because this, that and the other. Really miss you. Give me a call back when you get this. And I would do, and I remember I was doing this all the time. I remember being absolutely devastated when they cut that number off because it was a space for me to be able to send and process that grief. Could be a letter. Could move on to a letter. So you can do that one quite positively. And this next one, and last one, in fact, is a stone. I am not someone who, I do have them. I do carry stones with me occasionally, but I'm not as big into them as others. Something like moonstone is one that I've used previously. I can't speak on behalf of anything else, but moonstone I've used in the past for emotional healing. We're not going to go into that one too much because I don't know enough about stones and I've not done any research on that one. Now, let me finish just by saying thank you. Thank you so much for joining us again for another season. They are going to be a little bit deeper, but still a little bit silly. I do want to have a focus on some different emotions and different feelings and kind of mundane experiences with a bit of a witchy take and a bit of a critical take. I want to be creating a space for us to explore quite deeply experiences and feelings and create this therapeutic space for both you and I. It's maybe a little bit more serious, but still, you know, it's going to be witchy, bitchy, sassy and classy. So stick to those rules. I actually saw someone with that on a t-shirt. I can't remember when. It was just somewhere out. And it was, I think it was something that had been made for the show a really long time ago. And it's like, I didn't say anything and they didn't spot me. But there we go. Don't forget to stay witchy, bitchy, sassy, classy. You know it. You know it, my witchy friends. Take care. Welcome back.